in the sixth chapter of that epistle, and in verse number 9, where the record says, "Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not." I think the thrust of the verse is in the statement, "Let us weary in well-doing." At least that angle, or that's the part that I intend to amplify on tonight. Let us not be weary in well-doing. It's interesting that the idea of becoming indifferent, or the idea of sliding back, or the idea of returning maybe to agree anyway to the old weak and beggarly elements would be couched in such a word, weary. He says, let us not be weary. I guess generally in this physical being of ours, we probably use the synonym of being tired. We generally think it's from labor, and I guess that would be true. And there is a mental weariness too. But in the spiritual, it gets a little deeper than that. And I think the apostle is giving some of the strongest advice and also admonition here, that we are not to be weary in well-doing. I would like to discuss this from probably several different angles, but to me it seems like this is probably one of our big problems, maybe the largest one, I don't know. You know, I'm a little hesitant to say, well, this is the biggest problem, or this is the most acute problem, or something like that. Now, that might be a judgment call. That could be my evaluation of it. Maybe somebody else would think, well, there's something else larger, and they may face problems in another area. But I believe the success of the church is going to depend upon people that take a stand on this and that are determined within themselves that they're not going to tire or they're not going to wear out. Now, the work of a Christian, this thing just goes on and on. Now, a person can just work so long physically. Now, I'm not talking about years. I'm talking about consecutive hours. He can just go so long, and that's all he can handle. That's all he can stand. He has to be rested. But in the spiritual world, or in the church, this doesn't seem to be the case. Because there's no time on this, no limit on it at all. He just says, be not weary. Therefore, it must be possible. It must be possible for an individual to pursue a lifetime in Christianity and not become weary. If that's not the case, I'd like someone to point out where these recesses are along the line. Where's the time off in all of this? The book just comes out and says, be not weary in well-doing. It occurs to me that God has given a lot of advice along this line. And I'd like to pick up in the first chapter of the book of Joshua and go through that a little bit with you. It's a very abbreviated chapter, or a short chapter, only 9 verses. But God is getting ready to give this man some good, solid advice. I think all of us could have a feeling for Joshua, because look whom he follows. When you get somebody like Moses and all of the things that he was able to achieve, when you take a man that was just so outstanding, and even at 80 years old went down and was on that firing line slugging it out verbally with King Pharaoh in an attempt to get the Israelites liberated. All of the things that he achieved, the crossing of the Red Sea, the receiving the law on Sinai, having a great part in the building of the tabernacle, not that he was the craftsman, Bezalel and Aholiab, I believe, were the two men that were selected to take care of that. But nevertheless, he still is the leader. He's the one. And all of the things that he was able to achieve in his life. And then, at his demise, then God tapped Joshua on the shoulder. Now, get a feeling, if you will, of how he must have felt. If he was capable of having an inferiority complex, it probably would show here. It might even be somewhat justified. But God prepares him for this. You know, every one of us need a pep talk every once in a while. Every person has to be encouraged. That's the thing. And God gave Joshua one of the best. I think that the first chapter of the book of Joshua ought to be read by everybody here and then apply that very thing to themselves. If we could just take Joshua's name out and insert ours for a while in this and receive the same encouragement. Now, the task is a little different, I agree. But nevertheless, it's still work as far as God is concerned. It's work for God. Now, he's telling Joshua that he's going to have his problems. God does not hide the difficulty. He knows that there's going to be difficulty. I would get that from this chapter, even though I didn't know it from other sources, just due to the fact, the way and the method that God speaks to this man. And in this, he said, "There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so will I be with thee." Now, that'd give a person a boost, wouldn't it? "As I have been with Moses, so will I be with you." In all of the great tasks that Moses accomplished, now Joshua is promised that he can have the same help, the same source of help, if you will. And in verse 6 he says, Be strong and of good courage. Be strong and of good courage. In other words, don't faint. Be courageous. Be determined. He uses those words so frequently. Be strong and of good courage. And then he warns his responsibility. Yours is to lead these people across and get a division of the inheritance and all of that. And then in verse 7, God repeats himself. "Only be thou strong and very courageous." One place he says, "Be of good courage." Now he says, "Only be thou strong and very courageous." Not just mediocre, but just absolutely strong, absolutely brave, absolutely courageous. You see, this is the thing that Paul was saying. Now, he doesn't remark or doesn't go back and pick this up. But when he said, "Let us not be weary in well-doing." You see, this isn't the first place that this has been taught. And every person needs this. And then he tells him there is a way that you can draw upon something for strength. "For the book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. Then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success." As far as the King James Version is concerned, this is the only time, I believe, that the word success is mentioned in the book. Now, its equivalent is there, but he uses it here. And then he climaxes this chapter, or this line of thinking. He says, "Have I not commanded thee? Be strong and of good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed. For the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest." Now, this puts this thing in the realm of possibility, folks. This can be done. Not only can this be done, this must be done. We're going to have to be strong, and we're going to have to be courageous. For to be, as he said, to let not the book of the law depart from us, but meditate therein day and night, that you may be able to achieve these kind of things. Everything is outstanding about the Bible, but one of the outstanding things here is that God not only requires it, but he tells people how to do it. He tells what must be done, how it is to be done, and all of that. So again, I think Paul had been through several things. He certainly could speak this when he says, "Let us not be weary in well-doing." I like that. I like the pronoun us, don't you? Let us not you Galatians. The apostle was in this just as deep as he wanted them to be. He said, let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. If every person that had ever been baptized into Jesus Christ had to remain faithful, there's no way in the world that you could tell how great the Lord's institution would be numerically and strength-wise too upon this old earth. That's all that it would have taken. That might sound rather simplistic, but I'm just as confident that that's just exactly what we need. Just think. Almost every community that I go into, and I don't think your community is exempt for this, and every community that you go into, you'll find it. There are spiritual wrecks, as Paul spoke of shipwrecking our faith. All right. There are spiritual wrecks. They've just demolished themselves. They've destroyed themselves in every community. How many times do I have somebody point out some particular locality? Well, they used to be members. Or they used to be attenders. You've heard that and I've heard it. And you know the number is great, isn't it? In every locality, in every community, the number is great. What caused this? Somebody became weary in well-doing. You can't offer excuses on this. Maybe different ones left because of different circumstances, I don't know. But you cannot come up with a reason for doing that. Not at all. You see, if everybody that had ever been a part of the church was active today, it would be large. A lot larger than it is. But then again, there's another dimension to this that no man can figure out, but I can just use my imagination and it almost goes into orbit. Not only would we have a tremendous increase in members if everybody that obeyed the gospel had to remain faithful, but then, what about the number of people that these dropouts, if they'd have stayed in the faith, how many people would they have converted? You see, you've got an unknown quantity there, haven't you? No telling how many people they may have influenced. And the people that they influenced, they would have influenced someone. And on you go. This is why I believe this is such an important thing. If we can get people grounded, if we can get their feet anchored in the cement of love and devotion and conviction, that's the thing that's so needful. You know, people sometimes try to figure out various things as to why people do it. I remember in the fourth chapter of the book of Galatians, where he speaks there, the apostle does, that Demas hath forsaken me, having loved this present world. What do you think? What caused Demas to leave? You know, sometimes when people drop their faith or drop out of the fellowship or leave, however you want to phrase it, more times than not I hear, well, they must not have understood or they didn't have a good knowledge of it. I beg to differ with that just about 100%. I'm not saying that knowledge isn't necessary. I'm not saying that. I know it's necessary. But I don't believe lack of knowledge is the main cause of dropout. Here's a man that dropped out, and you'd have a difficult time convincing people that he didn't have any understanding. Here Demas was a co-worker with Paul. Now, can you imagine somebody rubbing shoulders with Paul day in and day out and being a co-worker with Paul that didn't have knowledge? You know as well as I know that this man, to the best of Paul's ability, and that ability is not inferior, surely, he understood. It said he dropped out, he departed, he left the apostle because he loved this present world. Of course, then I've had people ask me, well, what do you think was his problem? Naturally, it could have been many things, but I can think of one that I believe was there, and it's in people today. There's more people that leave their Lord because of lack of conviction than lack of knowledge. That's right. I'll take the person that has what you might term just a reasonable knowledge of the Scripture. He knows that Christ is Lord. He knew what it took to obey the gospel and all of that. He repented of his sins. He was baptized. He knew there was a responsibility to convene with the disciples regularly. He understands the Lord's Supper is to be taken, but he's not a walking encyclopedia of the Scripture. I'll take that person that has what I would say a rather minimal knowledge of the Scripture if he has strong conviction, if he really believes it and hangs in. I'll take that over the person that has all kinds of knowledge but has erratic conviction or lacks conviction. And I think you will too. He says, be not weary. Don't tire of this. You know, there's a classic example in the 13th chapter of the book of Acts, in verse 13 or in that area, of a young man, obviously was young. His name was John Mark. He was the one, you know, that started on the missionary journey. Yes. And when they got as far as Pamphylia, he was up to here with it. He decided, this is not for me. In other words, he turned back. He went clear on home. Just left them. Just deserted them. Just think of that. Later on, when Paul and Barnabas wanted to make a selection as far as a return visit on this journey and see how the disciples were doing, Barnabas wanted to take John Mark. Paul says, no, I don't believe we better. He had left us at Pamphylia and he went not with us to the work and so on. Barnabas held out and thought they should. Paul held out and thought they shouldn't. So what did they do? There was no doctrinal difference here. It was just a difference in judgment on this. So Barnabas took John Mark. And Paul took Silas. And they went on their journey. Now Barnabas was a tremendous encourager. He was, in fact, that's what the name means. He's the encourager. He was adept at this. There was no question about it. But John Mark, I don't know why he left in the first place, but he became weary for some reason. Maybe the rigors of evangelism. Maybe he couldn't stand that. And there's rigors there too, in case you want in on a little secret. There's problems there. There's work there. There's difficulty there and all of that. But there's difficulty in work in any area. Maybe he wasn't mature enough. In other words, something caused the turnaround. Something made him become weary some way, somehow. But to his credit, and to, I guess, I'll credit Barnabas with this. Years later, in 2 Timothy 4 and 11, the Apostle Paul asks that John Mark be sent to him. For he says, he is profitable for me in the ministry. Think of that. Somebody did their job, didn't they? Somebody turned the man around. And of course, he had to cooperate. You can't turn somebody around that won't cooperate. That's out. So this shows that being courageous and being strong is something that can be developed. It takes determination, folks. It takes conviction. These are the things that I think we need to think about, because that's the thing that holds the church and lets it maintain its growth. It lets it maintain its growth when people stay with what they promised. You know, a backslider has a terrible time, doesn't he? Solomon said one time, it's better for a man not to vow than to vow and not pay. I've always taken it that when a person made a confession, when a person was baptized, I think there's a pledge there. I think there's a vow. I think there's a promise. And when a person leaves or becomes weary and departs, he hasn't broken a promise to me particularly, but he's broken a promise with God. Just think in terms like that. Leaving Christ and leaving God, we're going to suffer some horrible consequences, but just think. We broke a promise that we made with the Lord. And that's catastrophic. That's awesome, isn't it? And that's what John Mark did, and yet he corrected it. He corrected this and became a workman. There's lots of ways you can become tired. I used to have problems with this, at least as far as accepting it. I don't anymore at all. I can see it real easy because it affects me that way. When the Old Testament recorded that much study is a weariness of the flesh, then I began to understand you can get really tired mentally and it affects you physically. You put in just a good, strong several hours of research, deep reading and so on like that, and you'll get a little fuzzy up here. But you know what? You feel like you'd been out with the lumberjacks physically too. And maybe you haven't hardly raised a muscle in the physical realm. But the mental part has taken its toll there too. No wonder he said that the much study was a weariness of mine. No, he didn't say that in that place. He said much study was the weariness of the flesh. So we can get weary in our thinking. And that's probably where it all begins anyway. That is from a biblical standpoint. We can get weary in our minds. How? Well, let's go back to Israel again. You know, under the reign of theocracy or the judges, Israel enjoyed just pretty good times. They had their ups and downs. Of course, the judges situation is kind of an interesting one anyway. It speaks of the judge that they had judges by a space of 450 years. If you want a little exercise in this thinking, go back and get all the judges and the number of years they reigned and add it up. And you're not going to get 450. You're going to get a little better than 200. What happens? Well, the Bible is not askew here at all. There were times when a judge ruled and then he was out. And several times through the judges, there's years or spans of years when there wasn't any judge. Every man did that which was right in his own sight and so on like that. But in the main, it was a pretty good thing. This one is set up by God anyway. Now talk about God foreseeing things. Do you realize that in the Old Testament record that God set up the qualifications for a king long before they ever had one? He knew that what they were going to do. And he set up what a king had to be. Even though he didn't like the idea that Israel was clamoring for a king. Now, why did they? God could have handled them without a king. Sure, he could have. If he couldn't have, he wouldn't have been opposed to the idea, would he? He could have done this. Israel got tired. They even admit it in this way. They really didn't. They weren't so strong on the king particularly. But the thing that was bothering them, they couldn't stand being different. They wanted to be like the nations. There was their problem. The Israelites wanted to be like, give us a king, like the people around us. Give us a king that way. They got tired of standing out like the proverbial sore thumb, you know. They got tired of other people having kings. Where's yours? Isn't that a kind of a weariness that can affect people today? Can't we become weary of things that the Lord has given? It's possible, folks. Undoubtedly, that's part of what the apostle has reference to when he says, be not weary in well-doing. They wanted to be like the nations. They didn't want to be conspicuous. They didn't want any snide remarks made about them. All of those things. And don't think for one minute that that kind of thinking can't get in us today. People get tired of being different. Isn't that strange? Just remember this. If you can keep from becoming weary of being different, if you can keep from becoming that way, you can go through this life and you're going to enter into a realm where everybody's alike. In heaven, people are alike. In other words, they're all saints. They're all redeemed people. Now, I don't know all about personality and all of that. That doesn't enter into it. But they'll all be God's people. And let's hang on to that. Then there's a weariness on this. People become tired. They become weary of belonging to a minority group. You hear a lot about minorities today and things like that. But we're not talking about that angle of it. Righteousness, righteous people have always been in the minority. Maybe with one exception. When Noah came out of the ark, the whole world was righteous. And that's about the only time I can think of where righteousness was in the majority. But when population is 8, why, it's not such a problem, maybe. But isn't it true? People become tired of standing by themselves or standing with a few. But it'll always be that way. The broad way will always have the most. The narrow way, the few. Be not weary. You see, the thing that makes us weary is looking around. When we look around, you can just see a lot of things that can discourage you. When you look around, you can just become weary of all that, see? You're looking in the wrong direction. Instead of looking around, let's look up. And once we can become convinced that even one person plus God is a majority, I don't care if there's a million people against it. One person plus God is a majority. There's no question about it. But it's hard to see, isn't it? Hard to grasp. Oh, so many things that affect us. I think we better buckle on the armor. And sharpen up, excuse me, Melvin, the rusty sword. And be just determined that we're not going to become weary. in well-doing. In fact, that's your only hope. There's no other way of winning the race.